Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
What's up, buds?
Check away and now the counter. Here come the Caps. Kuznetsov gets loose. Evgeny coming down the middle. A shot. And it comes in over. He scores. He scores. Evgeny Kuznetsov wins it for Washington. It's off to the third round. The Demons have been exercised.
Welcome back to Japers Rank Radio. I'm your host, Greg Young, joining here from Denmark, which is exciting. My first podcast, I think, that I've ever recorded overseas. And I figured, with being overseas, I needed a familiar face, someone who, I've had on Japers Rank Radio a number of times. And also with about a million pieces of Capitals and NHL-wide news breaking, I figure no time better to invite Samantha Pellon, Washington Post beat writer for the Washington Capitals, of course. So Samantha, how are you doing?
I'm doing good. Just kind of watching all this news happen, not only to the Caps, but basically across the NHL. It seems like a lot more teams have been way more active than the Capitals. But no, it's been good. It's been fun. Obviously, a lot to talk about. I'm excited.
Let's do it. All right. Well, I figure we would start in reverse chronological order from when I've been gone. But that does us a disservice because we have to talk about Alex Ovechkin before we talk about a Vitek Vanacek trade, right? So let's dive right into the Ovechkin contract because I think it's interesting on a number of levels. But I think let's kind of start with the broader question here. Like, where was this contract kind of with your expectations for, you know, what the contract was going to look like? And kind of what do you think the broader picture of the contract is?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me is obviously the AAV with 9.5. I think a lot of people thought that maybe he would be taking a team-friendly deal, but maybe I think everyone thought that was a $10 million team-friendly deal, yes. Not a 9.5, not a little bit lower than what he was making. So, this is a great deal, I think, for the Capitals. I mean, when you think about the 13-year, $124 million, that was probably one of the best aging contracts in the NHL at the time, just in terms of longevity and what, you know, Alex is really worth. And now, especially with the team so tied to the cap, it did make sense for him to take a little bit of a hit, but I still thought $10 million was what everyone was looking at. I think especially the 5 years probably knocked that down to a 9.5, made sense all around for both parties. I'm going to be really intrigued to see why 5 years was sort of the number for both, but those are the biggest things that stood out for me.
Yeah, well, that's, I mean, it's interesting with the fifth year, right? Because I feel like it seems like some of the thought was that maybe it was going to be a 4-year or even a 3-year. I even heard it speculated somewhere that maybe it would be a like a recurring 1-year kind of deal, like Zdeno Chara was for a long time with Boston. Mm-hmm. So, kind of, why do you think it landed at such a longer term than maybe some of the people were thinking?
Yeah, you know, I think it was always around that 4 to 5 year range. I don't know if it ever really got down to a 3 or a 1. I know there was all floated. But I think, you know, when you look at the franchise, you look at my first thought was Nicklas Backstrom and how long his contract runs. That's another 4 years. So 4 years is very obvious to a lot of people. John Carlson's runs another 5 years. That's another big piece of the puzzle for the Caps. So I'd be interested to know if this was more kind of team oriented, kind of window. I know we use that word a lot, but do they think the window is 5 years? You know, Nick could sign for another year. They all go out happy. Who knows? But also, you know, Gretzky's record. Now, you know, if Alex does score 40 plus goals the next couple of years, maybe he starts to slow down as he gets older, as everyone does. You know, it's kind of maybe more realistic to hit this in 5 seasons. That's what it seems like, at least from the outside looking in on all of this. So, yeah, I think overall it makes sense. It's just, it's a long contract. He's going to be, you know, 40 when that contract hits in his last year. So it'll be really interesting to see, you know, how it all progresses.
Yeah, and I think it's safe to say he's almost certainly going to be a Capital for life. But I guess I'm kind of curious, like, you know, it seemed like the reporting at least was basically that this was like always kind of a done deal and that they were waiting for the expansion draft so they could protect one more player. Do you think that this was a done deal, or do you think that they were legitimately working up until Wednesday when they announced the deal?
Yeah, I think the basic structure was in place this whole entire time. I think both parties, again, I know people probably get so tired of us saying this, like they both wanted the same thing. They both wanted Alex back. They knew this was going to happen, Capital for life. I do think the years is what probably was the biggest thing that was going back and forth. I'm not sure it was signed, sealed, delivered, you know, 3 months ago with the exact year and number. I just think they probably ended the season with a general understanding of what they wanted to do, and they'll go back to it once, you know, they have the expansion draft, once they figure out, okay, you know, Seattle took Vanecek. Obviously, we're going to talk about that later, but, you know, Seattle took Vanecek. It's not a big cap hit. Now we have to think about the ramifications for Ovechkin. What do they do on the blue line? They traded Dylan to make more cap space. So I think that was probably explained to Alex more or less of, let's see where we land at. Let's talk again. But I do think it was pretty much sign, seal, deliver, just a couple holdups here and there.
Sure. That makes sense. And I don't know, like, I guess kind of hindsight on this a little bit. You know, obviously, Alex Ovechkin, Washington Capitals is synonymous. But, you know, it did take until like the very, you know, last day that it could for this extension to happen before Ovechkin was going to hit the open market. So kind of like, what do you think? Do you think this was hanging over the team at all? And they're kind of, some of the players might be relieved that this is over? Or do you think that everyone kind of just assumed that Alex Ovechkin was going to be a Capital, and this maybe wasn't that big of a deal in the regular season?
Yeah, I think everyone kind of knew. I think that was always the reoccurring storyline, was that he was going to be back. It was just going to be about for how much and for how long. So I'm not sure it weighed as much on the team as, like, for example, the Nicklas Backstrom or Braden Holtby scenario, where the team had to basically decide in season midway through who to go with. And obviously they chose Nick. So I think overall, I don't think it was a big distraction. I think everyone knew it was going to get done. Why it took, you know, to the very last minute before this all happened, I think that's a team organization thing and just how they decided to roll that out. But no, I think it went exactly how they thought it would go.
There you go. And, you know, I think I kind of want to, like, you know, because one of the bigger things that you were hitting on a little earlier was kind of, you know, the contention window. And I'm tired of talking about this, although I seem to talk about it all the time. So I don't know what that means. But, you know, I think that one of the interesting things, you know, is we talk about 5 years, and it seems like that's when a lot of these contracts kind of sunset. So, you know, it seems like the Capitals have kind of made their move, right? That, like, they're going to try to, you know, compete with the Stanley Cup pretty much with the same core, right? Is that kind of the read you're getting on with this, the Carlson and the Backstrom deals all kind of locked up for a long term?
Yeah, that's what it's kind of just going towards. I mean, I guess we have to talk about, you know, the Kuznetsov and Oshie contracts too, and how long they go. And That's a whole nother story. But I think overall, they are confident in the core that they have. They have for a very long time. And it's just about kind of retooling, not rebuilding at this point. Maybe they reevaluate that in 2 to 3 years once maybe some of these guys, if Alex, for some reason, if Backstrom doesn't produce at what they have been producing at. I mean, everyone kind of forgets, or maybe they don't, that Backstrom did have a really great regular season last year, you know, before the playoffs. And so I just think production wise, it's going to be interesting to see what these guys do in the next couple of years. And then they kind of move on, but they're slowly starting to add, I think, some younger pieces with, you know, Martin Parivari probably coming up, playing a big role. Daniel Sprong, you know, they protected in the expansion draft. So I think there'll be little changes, but yeah, I mean, overall, it pretty much is the same team.
Yep. So the other kind of piece that's been breaking, or you know, kind of been the little bit of a saga, although I don't think there was a ton of drama around this, really, was what I'm going to call the Vitek Vanacek Chronicles, which is, of course, he gets taken by Seattle. And, you know, as a Capitals fan, I think that some of us were, and then there was a bit of an interesting divide in people saying, oh, well, this was like the guy who was third on the depth chart going into the year, you know, this isn't that big of a deal, versus people saying, you know, look, this is a guy who won, you know, a lot of games with the Capitals, who was a rock in goal when they really needed him to. So, you know, they lose him, and then they almost immediately get him back. I think the Seattle Kraken had a nice little joke there, commemorating Vitek Vanacek's time in Seattle with, you know, a picture of him as a Washington Capital, but with a Seattle Kraken S over it. So, I don't know, kind of break down what you think happened here with Vitek, and kind of what do you think the role for him is going to be going forward, and kind of what do you see his tenure as a Capital shaping up to be at this point?
Yeah, I think it's super interesting with Vitek Vanacek, because I think, you know, right now the Capitals, when they lost Vitek in the expansion draft, the big headline was, okay, the Caps need a number two goalie. They need a backup, basically. You know, everyone kind of put all their eggs in one basket with Ilya Samsonov and kind of what he can do. And that, it seems like that's what the organization wanted. And then all of a sudden, you know, Grubauer goes and signs with Seattle. Seattle's super crowded, and Vitek now goes back to basically replace himself in Washington, because he's the best option at this point. When you looked at the market, when you looked at the numbers, I mean, his contract, that's why Seattle really loved him, right? Or it was the cap hit, it was the value, and Washington wants the same thing. They need the same thing, honestly, yes. If they want to go out and make any more moves and at this point. So I think overall, you know, he should be the backup head into the season. I think, you know, I was talking to some other reporters about it, and it's almost kind of like he's going to be maybe in the same spot as he was last year. I mean, is he really going to be a number two? Is Henrik Lundqvist really going to be maybe not, or is ready to play medically? I mean, we don't know.
Yep.
At this point, he's not, but maybe he could be at the start of the season. You know, Craig Anderson's now off the table. People thought he was going to retire. He signed with Buffalo last night, Wednesday night. And so I think overall, Vitek should be number two, but I mean, what happens if another, you know, kind of cheap veteran goaltender kind of pops up, like a Lundqvist, like someone else, and the Caps think, oh, hey, maybe this is our chance to add someone, again, veteran, to a group that probably needs some more guidance.
Yeah, no, absolutely. It's kind of an interesting thing. And one part of the Vitek Vanacek Chronicles is Brendan Dillon, who is now not a Washington Capital, who was traded to the Winnipeg Jets for 2 second-round picks, one of which the Capitals then immediately used to get Vitek Vanacek back as a Capital. So I guess what do we think about Brendan Dillon, and why, you know, I think that you really could have said, oh, like, the Capitals maybe had to pick between two of the three defensemen, that being, you know, Jensen, Dillon, and Schultz. And it seems like Dillon kind of was the one that got the short end of the straw. So do you think this was a matter of the Capitals really not liking Dillon? Do you think that was them just kind of saying, we needed this space to sign Ovechkin? Kind of what do you think the impetus was behind the idea of trading Dillon for picks?
Yeah, I think the main thing, honestly, was cap space. I think it was, okay, you look at his $3.9 million contract. I mean, you could say the same for Justin Schultz, right? I think maybe the team, probably when you look at Laviolette's system, everything that Laviolette has said last season was he's very offensive-minded on defense, and Justin Schultz is the perfect mold for that. When Schultz, you know, was healthy and wasn't injured, he was very good for the Caps. You know, he worked on the power play. He really helps, I think, overall in zone time. And, you know, Dylan obviously is good in his own right at certain times. I think, you know, he's physical, he's big, he worked on certain pairings well. But I think overall, as the season went on, I think it was probably more clear that I think the Capitals needed to lose one of the two of them, both in terms of cap space and, you know, maybe Dylan's play there at the end. So I do think the main thing was cap space, but I think when you just start to compare players and what the Capitals, what's best for their system, I think a player like Schultz is probably easier for them at this point. Maybe they see that he has more upside when healthy. And, you know, same with Jensen. I mean, his cap hit's 2.5. He was very good last season with Chara. I think that's now the bigger question is, yep, who do you pair with Jensen? If it is Farivari, is that pairing going to work on a third pairing? Does Jensen need a veteran? Is Jensen now a veteran? Like, I think that dynamic is going to be super interesting.
Yeah, well, and that's, I kind of want to talk about the blue line a little bit because it's definitely shuffled a little bit, right? Because I think going into last year, you would have said, all right, like the Caps' number one pair is probably going to be John Carlson and Brendan Dillon. And now, you know, they kind of shuffled that around. Right. You know, they experimented with Orlov and Carlson. That seemed to not really work at the start of the year. And then they came back to it late. And I'm kind of wondering, like, how do we think these pairs are going to shake out? Because I think that, you know, where Schultz fits in and where I think Nick Jensen fits in, who I agree with you was spectacular, or was maybe not spectacular, that's probably a bit of a stretch, but was, I think, very good during large stretches of last year. Kind of like, where do we think this all kind of shakes out?
I mean, that's kind of the crazy thing. I do think it has to be a Farivari. I mean, from the bottom up, I think it's Farivari and Jensen are your third pairing to start, at least. I think we've kind of seen over the past couple of years with Jensen that maybe he's better suited for a third pairing role, or if it is in a top four, it has to be with a very strong left side defenseman. And I mean, is that Michael Kempe? Is that Orlov? I think, you know, Peter Laviolette liked the Orlov-Carlson pairing. I know a lot of people were skeptical about it, probably still are very skeptical about Orlov-Carlson. But I think as of now, I mean, you just look at it, it probably has to be a Orlov-Carlson. I mean, you have to get TVR in there, right?
Yeah.
So,
yeah, that's the other thing. I was going to ask about this later, but I guess now is as good a time as any with us talking about it. Well, I mean, one of the things that was curious about the expansion draft was we were all kind of wondering who the third defenseman they were going to protect would be after Orlov and Carlson. And I don't think many people, me included, had TVR as the guy they were going to protect third. So I don't know. To me, that seems like they at least McClellan wants to see him have a pretty decent sized role next year.
Yeah, I also think, you know, along those lines, Seattle, basically McClellan told reporters, I think it was last week, that they knew that Seattle liked kind of those cheap salary caps, good value contracts, and TVR is on a really great deal. So maybe they thought that they would take TVR. So they're basically protecting him in order so that Seattle didn't take him. I think that so Washington had the chance to at least see TVR more and see if he would fit in and where he would fit in. So I think it was very strategic in that case. I don't think it was an automatic, okay, we're protecting TVR, he's going to be a top four defenseman. But I do think they really like him, and that's why they extended him, and that's why he's still here. I think where it gets a little dicey is, you know, Michael Kempe, what's his health status? Is he really full go? Does he get, you know, first dibs over a guy like TVR? Same with Farivari. Does Farivari get a shot before TVR does? So they're still kind of crowded, which is weird. Thinking that Chara left, Dylan left. Like, it seems like we talked about this all last season, that they had a crowded blue line, and they have a crowded blue line again, and they didn't add anyone really. I think it'll be super interesting, but I mean, really, Orlov Carlson is probably the safest bet, unless Kempe, they feel like, is, you know, ready, good to go, 100%, both, you know, physically and mentally.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. And I'm going to be curious. And I think training camp this year is going to be interesting because I think Ferravari is someone that clearly, I think it seems like you and, Tarek and some of the other people around the Capitals have kind of said in the caps, really, I think see him kind of slotting into the lineup next year. So that'll kind of be interesting. I think the last thing we're going to talk about before we take a break and maybe speculate a little more as the future Capitals plans is someone we hinted about earlier, someone who is still a Washington Capital, although it seems like, I saw Greg Wyshynski say that he was like almost 100% sure Kuznetsov was going to get traded. That hasn't totally fit with what I've heard and what kind of McClellan has said, but I'm kind of curious, like, well, I guess maybe let's start with this. Why is Evgeny Kuznetsov still a Capital? And do you think he will still be a Capital by the time the training camp starts?
Yeah, two very different good questions. Yeah. I think why Kuznetsov is still a Capital is honestly the trade value. I'm not sure that the return is there at this current time / will ever be there. I think my thought process, just purely my opinion, is I'm not sure even if they did lose Kuznetsov, I'm not sure anyone they would get back would automatically be able to fill his role in any capacity. I think the Capitals are kind of stuck internally. I'm not sure if they have a guy to fill his role. I mean, the first guy you think of is Connor McMichael. But do you want to Backstrom, Eller, McMichael, Dowd? Those are your four centers down the line. Or do you want to take another shot with Kuznetsov and you still have a Backstrom, Kuznetsov, Eller, Dowd? Try it for one more year, half a year. I don't know. Maybe he could be gone at the trade deadline. But I think McClellan left room for him being, you know what, like he was very open and honest at the end of the last season of, I don't have the confidence to know if Kuznetsov is going to be, you know, good 100% next season. He's like, I can't tell you that, right? He's like, I have no clue. He's been inconsistent for me the last few seasons. That's what I do know. But what he also said was, look, he had COVID twice last season, you know, kind of a weird year. We're just going to kind of see where it lands. So I think basically, you know, GMs have to say that about their players, right? You know, he's a great player. He's good. We don't know where we want to put him, but I think overall it's probably the trade value. It's the market. It's, you see all these other guys and what their contracts are going for and you think, okay, what can they realistically get? And I'm not sure if the return is there.
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. And the other kind of interesting name floating out there that I've almost tied to Kuznetsov in my brain a little bit as someone who I'm curious to see how the trade market develops is Vladimir Tarasenko. And he, of course, is still a St. Louis Blue as of this recording, although it seems like there might be a move somewhat soon on him, although I'm not totally sure. With that, we're going to, though, take a quick break. And then on the other side, I'm going to ask Samantha Pell to blindly speculate on what the Capitals are going to do. And she's going to give me a way better answer than any kind of dumb blind speculation I would give. So stay tuned. Welcome back to Jay Prisner Radio. Still here with Samantha Powell. And Samantha, one of the kind of bigger things about the Capitals free agency so far has been that they haven't added anyone. Really, they've only subtracted with Brendan Teleman. So what do we kind of think about what they're going to be doing going forward? And do you see any big news on the horizon? Or do you think, I mean, it's like we kind of talked about earlier, the Capitals have kind of announced their intention with the core. So do you see a big move on the horizon? Or do you think this is kind of where we think the Caps are at this point?
Yeah, I think this is kind of where the Caps are at this point. I think it would surprise me if they did go get like a flashy free agent signing, like we've seen some of these teams do, but I do think maybe they add someone, just depth wise, I could see maybe a depth forward being added, but you also think that lineup is pretty much the same with, you know, Daniel Sprong and Connor Sheary and how those guys kind of fit in. They're kind of in the same spots as they were before. You didn't lose anyone. So I think if it is going to be anyone added, it'll just be maybe a couple kind of fringe guys that maybe could help contribute. But I think what they have internally as well kind of works from the guys in Hershey, and maybe they want to give those guys a shot before, you know, going out and trying to sign anyone else. I think the goalie market is interesting, even though they did get Vanacek. Are they going to be looking still for someone else? Who knows? I mean, that's basically what Seattle did. So I think overall, this team is kind of it. As much as that sounds very sure, and I'm sure, you know, something's going to happen now in 5 minutes, it's going to blow everything up. No, I think this is it, just looking at cap space and the team and everything that, you know, management has set up to this point.
No, absolutely. Absolutely. I will say, you know, I do wonder almost though, if Kuznetsov is traded, then could you, I mean, is that maybe when we say, okay, like maybe they have the room to pull off, I know from Luke from our site is kind of joke that he would love Jack Eichel to be a Washington Capital, but it almost seems like Kuznetsov moving would almost be the prerequisite to any kind of crazy big thing happening, no?
Yeah, I think if the Capitals were to, again, like blow it up, kind of make a huge scene, I think that would be Kuznetsov moving first in the return for that or wherever he goes. But I don't think, you know, they can really move anyone else that's going to kind of move the needle in my eyes. I think maybe if they did want to move a defenseman, if, you know, they did want to move Schultz still, or they did want to move Jensen, then maybe that's something that they would look at. I think that would signal that they're very confident in a guy like Michael Kempney or in TVR and Ferravari and think that they're good to go and they don't really need sort of these backups behind them. But at this point, it seems like the Dylan trade was kind of the big one to get picks, and then the Vanacek thing to come back. Ovi's good. So it seems like to me, this is still where we're at.
No, absolutely. That makes sense. And, you know, one of the other big pieces of things on news that it seems like they kind of have to do, I would argue probably the last big one is Samsonov and his restricted free agency. The Capitals are going to have to, you would think, come to some kind of deal or trade him away, or I guess the team could offer sheet him, although that seems really unlikely. So kind of what do you think the status of the Samsonov RFA negotiations are?
Yeah, I know that McClellan has talked to Samsonov's representatives. They talked before free agency, had initial conversations. They feel like, you know, probably a bridge deal is the way to go here, just in terms of, I would say, even less salary cap and more performance-based on the bridge deal. I think both sides kind of realize the inconsistencies that he's had last season, and even, you know, obviously dating back to the off-ice injury situation in the postseason, you know, he still has a long way to go. So I think at this point, a bridge deal makes the most sense for both sides, and they both understand that. So they're just kind of working towards it. It seems like there's really no big issues there. Samsonov does have arbitration rights. So we'll see where that goes. But at least right now in the present, everything seems to be working out. And yeah, I would expect that to be coming.
Okay, there you go. It's going to be interesting, I guess, to see kind of what the number is, although I would imagine it's not going to be the highest number in the history of the world. One of the other things that I'm kind of interested in your thoughts on is, I've been gone, and a lot more on that in a bit. The expansion draft happened, and I know we talked a little bit earlier about the fact that TVR was maybe kind of a slight surprise in terms of, him being the third defenseman protected. But was there anything that kind of surprised you about the Caps list? And obviously we have the hindsight of learning that they now have Vitek Vanacek back. Do you think that that was even remotely part of the plan, that they would try to get him back? Or kind of what was your kind of thought about how they handled the expansion draft? And were there any kind of surprises in terms of people they left protected or unprotected?
Yeah, I think the biggest thing for me was TVR, but then thinking about it and, you know, hearing McClellan kind of explain it of, you know, contracts and all that, and knowing that the Capitals needed to kind of shed some salary cap space, I think it made sense. I mean, I think the Capitals were probably going to be content if they did lose Dylan in the expansion draft, or they were going to trade him. I think that probably was always on the table. I think McClellan always kind of thinks two or three steps ahead. I'm not sure if the Vanacek thing ever crossed their minds. I'm sure it had to, but I know from Seattle's point of view, they thought Vanacek was going to be part of their tandem. And then, you know, Grubauer was on the market and things just kind of turned really quickly there. So, you know, maybe Mac was playing 3D chess and we just didn't know.
I don't think many people had Seattle getting Grubauer though, including Seattle, right, by the way. So,
right. I was like, I think Seattle was a little surprised that this all happened. And, you know, Washington just kind of jumped on it and was like, hey, the best person to replace Vitek Vanacek is Vitek Vanacek. So I think it all worked out in the end. I think for Seattle, I'm not sure what they're doing. I think a lot of people were probably a little confused with all of that, but, you know, maybe some people thought, at least from the Cavs perspective, they could have protected Sherry instead of Sprong, but I think maybe Sprong would have been a really valuable asset to someone like Seattle, a young guy, probably, you know, always plays well in a top six role. And maybe he doesn't get that here in Washington next season. So who knows what his production levels are going to be. But I think overall, it was what we expected. Just that TBR thing. But now looking back, it makes sense.
No, that makes sense. Yeah, absolutely. And I guess I'll indulge Luke one more time. One of the things I'm kind of interested in next year is, obviously the Capitals are bringing, unless something crazy happens, which of course, as soon as we stop recording, something will crazy will happen because that's the name of the business. But, you know, I think that I'm kind of curious what Daniel Sprong's role is going to be next year. So let's kind of maybe conclude here by doing a little bit of forecasting for next year. What do you think, let's start with Sprong and then I'll kind of ask a general question to conclude. So what do you think is Sprong's role is going to be next year? I mean, it was interesting to me that they protected him and over Sherry, even though it seemed to me like Laviolette maybe trusted Sherry a little bit more. So I'm kind of curious, like, what are your thoughts on Sprong and kind of where do you see him slotting next year?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest thing that I took away from Sprong last year and Laviolette and how Laviolette talked towards the end of the year, Laviolette would always say, you know, I think I will always want to put a player in the best position for him to succeed. And it seemed like that was always the hint that he thought that Sprong was best in a top six role among the forwards, and he just didn't fit in the bottom six because Sprong is such a goal scorer. He's more offensive minded. Honestly, like he said that he needs to work more on his 200-foot game. I think we saw that, you know, Laviolette probably didn't put a line with Sprong on it, you know, a lot in the defensive zone to start. It made sense for Sprong to, you know, be in an OV position when OV was out and why he scored so many goals when he did, because he was put in a position with Kuznetsov basically to succeed instantly, right? On a top line and with guys like that. And that's why it kind of all worked out. But when he did go into a bottom six role, maybe he didn't get that chance to maybe score. It wasn't, you know, offensively minded there, you know, with like a Lars Eller and, you know, like a Raffle or, you know, a Sherry or someone like that on the other side. So for me, I'm going to be really curious to see if Laviolette even tries to put him in a top six role somehow. I think we saw that, you know, with like a TJ Oshie moving down to a third line and kind of mixing him up that way and trying to create more equal lines all the way down. So I'm not really sure, and that's probably a bad answer, but I'm not really sure where Sprong fits in because he has the talent, he's young. Obviously we've seen he's explosive when he's in, but it's about finding, I think, that right line and right chemistry. And honestly, how many minutes can you trust him both, you know, offensively and defensively?
Yeah. And I think I'll conclude by asking this. I'm going to phrase this as the Connor McMichael question, but I think you can probably apply it a little more broadly. The Caps are definitely not replete with prospects, but they have a few. And I think we've talked a little bit about Martin Ferravari, and we think that he might seem to slot in as the six or kind of at minimum 70. Do you think there's anyone else that kind of you would see cracking the lineup? And, also the Connor McMichael question, right? Like it seems like they want to start him in the AHL, but I would imagine if the Caps struggle, particularly offensively early in the year, he might be one of the first people they look to really see if they can get some scoring depth from him.
Right. Yeah. I think definitely first off, it seems like Ferravari, again, they want him to be in that full-time role. I think McClellan said something to the effect of, we want him to be a full-time player. Like we will make other moves if need be to get him there. Like it seems like they're very, very determined to at least give him a shot.
Yeah.
And make sure that he has a chance. And, you know, if he gets that chance, doesn't do well, then, you know, let's all reevaluate our lives. But I think for right now, that's kind of the plan. I think with McMichael, maybe the team it seems to me maybe a little bit more hesitant to throw him in. I mean, we saw him make his debut. We saw him, you know, play a couple of games there, but it never seemed like they were so, I guess, determined to put him in as they are with Ferravari. Maybe that's just positioning. Maybe that's just where they feel like players fit in best and at this current time. But I think overall, you're right. McMichael probably should get a shot, will get a shot if there's any injuries up front. But I wouldn't say that he's as... he's not as locked in as a Ferravari in terms of an opportunity right away, if that makes sense. No, I think he's more down the line.
Absolutely. No. That makes sense. And, you know, it'll definitely be interesting, I think, with training camp, because I think, you know, it's not like the Caps from a few years ago. You know, I think that they have some spots that are going to be interesting to see how everything kind of shakes out. So, you know, and it's as interesting as you can get for a team that is basically bringing their entire roster back, minus Brendan Dillon. So we'll definitely we'll see how that goes. But Samantha, I know you're going to see how it goes from your perch at the Washington Post, and you'll be keeping us informed every step of the way. So this is going to be as smooth of an end transition as I could think. So I'm going to give myself a B plus for that. But where can people find you and your various works and musings when your current role?
Yeah, you know, everything will be on my Twitter, everything will be on WashingtonPost.com. That's where I work.
It will be on the Washington Sports Twitter, right? Or Washington Post Sports Twitter, right? I would think.
Yeah. I'm like, it will be on Twitter somewhere. I'm sure people will retweet it or something. Maybe, hopefully, or not. Everything's on my Twitter. We'll see how things go. It'll be a little bit quiet after, I would assume, you know, the Ovechkin announcement. Today is Thursday, so he has a virtual event, maybe some couple of free agent signings here and there. We'll see what happens. But it should be quiet until September.
Yeah. All right. Well, and we're going to keep the content rolling at Jabers Rink Radio, although I'm still trying to kind of figure out my schedule being abroad and everything like that. So with that, if you like the show, please rate, subscribe, review. There are other Capitals podcasts out there now. And so the more reviews we get, the more people can find the show. And that's always exciting. And with that, Samantha, thank you so much for joining. And we're excited. I would imagine we'll probably ask you to come on again in September. So I'm excited to chat with you then.
Absolutely. Thanks so much. This has been fun.